comfort for one another,
the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, with the only being united with all the illuminated souls, we form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance.
This body of teachings that I'm offering are from Pura Murshid and Icon. They appear in the Sufi Message volume on health and healing, and it's on the chapter of the privilege of being human. I mean, what an amazing phrase, the privilege of being human. Murshid goes through these different categories, and I think it's very interesting. Some of you have had the opportunity, being outside of the country maybe for an extended period of time. I was living in the Middle East, in the Persian Gulf and the Emirates when it just became the Emirates. It was originally the Trucial States, they were individual kingdoms, and in the 70s they unified to become the United Arab Emirates, or the UAE. So I was living there and working there, and I wasn't fully engaged in the Arab community. These principles are very alive in that culture. We don't understand them in the same way, I don't think. You know, it would be, for example, and Yasmin, I don't remember if you were in Saudi with your family.
I was.
But, you know, one of the things that they would tell us, or my people that I was with that were Arabs, I would say, be very careful to not compliment someone on a piece of clothing or something in their home, because they'll give it to you. Do you know what I mean? So there's a way of sort of admiring something without it, because that's just that graciousness, it's that generosity. And in Indian culture, it's the same way. I've often said that Indian culture is almost a little bit like killing you with kindness. Excuse me, anyone that's listening from afar. But they're so gracious and they're so kind. It can be, we're not used to receiving that. So it can be a bit much. Nonetheless, there are things that would be worthwhile for us to think about and engage. It's the same in the Turkish culture, you know, having been there. So the first day I wanted to deal on the subject, Murshid's subject, he calls it overlooking. And the term that is Arabic is darkaza is the word. And Murshid says this. There is a tendency which manifests itself and grows in a person who is advancing spiritually. Oh my God, I hope we all are. And that tendency is overlooking. Now, I would say this is also having a little bit of self-love in here too, because we have the tendency to pick ourselves apart. We probably more than others highlight our own faults to ourselves. And we can't really evolve if we're doing that. It's a little bit what Murshida Darvesha was saying this morning. It's good to be enthusiastically mindful or awake to those things, but then don't live there. They can be our stepping stones. So Murshid says, at times this tendency might appear as negligence. At times, this may appear as negligence. Hirvalayat used to tell us, He said that about compassion. He would say there's an active form of compassion and a lazy part of compassion. Sometimes compassion is being fully engaged and taking some sort of action or a stand, and lazy compassion is, well, I'm compassionate and whatever can happen. So, you know, we have to be discerning. We have to turn on our wisdom mind. So at times this tendency might appear as negligence. But in reality, negligence is not necessarily overlooking. He does this all the time. He's like, he's giving us koans, isn't he? Mm-hmm. At times, this tendency might appear as negligence. But in reality, negligence is not necessarily overlooking. It's like paradigm shifting. Negligence, ooh, that's a hard word for me to say. Negligence most often is not overlooking. Overlooking may be called, in other words, overlooking may, in other words, be called rising beyond things. So we're lifting that view. We're lifting the consciousness. Those of you in the native, attuned to the native tradition, you know it's like the eagle or the hawk. We get that big picture, you know. What's the mind of God if we get far enough away from our own individuality? What could be happening? Thank you, Allah, for everything. So overlooking may be called, in other words, rising beyond things. Beyond. Well, that's not even above, is it? It's just rising beyond, like an expanded awareness to include it. One has to rise in order to overlook. The one who stands beneath life could not overlook, even if he or she wanted to. So where's the view? Where's the view? Is there anything in life that we feel we could use a greater insight in overlooking? Something about ourselves or another person? Does anyone have that in their lives?
Continuously.
Endlessly.
Well, we might think about this and contemplate what Murshid's offering us here, this idea. In the contemporary vernacular, we would call it inclusion, wouldn't we? Inclusion. Is there enough space in our lives for ourselves and the other's point of view? Some of my best friends are the people that I may disagree with the most, because I have the most to learn from them. And if you love someone, you can be ruthlessly honest with them, with great love. So Murshid gives us a list here about overlooking. He gives us some examples. Overlooking is a manner of graciousness. We all know that Sufi tale of the king who's offering this banquet and someone sort of knocks over their glass of wine, and so as to not let that person be embarrassed, the king knocks over his glass of wine and laughs. No, it's that, right? It's graciousness. Overlooking is a manner of graciousness. Have you ever accidentally walked into the bathroom and someone forgot to lock the door? Don't you just look away immediately like, oh, sorry, I didn't see anything. Well, that's a literal example. But, you know, it's kind of like that. You don't want someone else to be embarrassed. So, point number two Murshid gives, it is looking, and at the same time, it is not looking. So I believe, I'm not a parent, that was very much my choice, but those of you that are, I suspect there are many things that you see your child doing and you know that it's just a lesson to be learned and you have to kind of overlook things. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every day.
And we do that with each other. We do that with our loved ones. We do that in all manners, I think. We could do it in all manners. I often talk about my mother because, you know, in the Indian culture, they say mother's the first guru. And mom, she would do that very much so. Those of you that knew her maybe witnessed it, but she could size somebody up just like that. And she would have a penetrating concentration. And she was very sensitive to people's manner. And it could even be just an exchange, like at a grocery store or something like that, and it would, might be the checker. And she could tell if the person was agitated or sad or, you know, not feeling well. And she'd size them up, like just like that, and she'd find a way to connect. Not highlighting what she might have felt was to the contrary in their lives, but highlighting something positive. I know Rashida Vira gave that as an exercise too. She'd say if there's some tragedy or harm that's come to one, don't focus on that, focus on something beautiful. Love, harmony, and beauty. I don't think she was suggesting a bypass, but I think she was considering a remedy. Murshid also says, it's seeing and not taking notice of what is seen. So another just, it's me perhaps a trivial example, and you may have your own and please share them, but you know, sometimes someone trips and you know they're a little embarrassed or slipped or something, and if they catch themselves, you just try not to pay any attention. You know, you just let it go and greet them in another way. So it's being gracious. It's being hurt or harmed or disturbed by something and yet not minding it. Whoa, that's a really big one. But how amazing. Rising above or rising beyond it. But I do know people that are can get quite unhappy because they keep replaying that same story. It's almost like the hamster wheel and they can't overcome it. And it's sometimes so long in the past. But they just relive it, you know? Relive it and relive it and relive it. And so, and not mind, and yet not minding it. Like, yes, I know that happened. I was hurt by that. But how do you deal with it if someone's past that you feel that with? You have to find a way to heal and overlook. The word Murshid uses is overlook. And then he says, by overlooking me, it contributes to this quality in our character of nobleness. I was rather good friends. We had correspondence and we've lost contact, but I was rather good friends with one of the lepers in India, in Dharamsala, when I lived there. And, you know, he had one leg and he had, this hand was often bandaged. And I have to say, I just have a natural curiosity. And I would ask him, can you show me? I want to see your wounds. I want to know what's going on and how it happened. And you may know, you think it's from uncleanliness. It's not necessarily, so sometimes a neurological disorder. So what will happen is people can't feel like fire on their fingers or feet, and then they get burned, and then an infection comes, which is quite easy to do in India. But he was quite, you know, he was always clean in his dress. He wore a little hat, you know, that was always so beautiful. His bandages were always clean. And he and his wife both had leprosy, but the children didn't. Have I told you this story?
No.
So he said, would you like to meet my children? And I said, I would love that. So, and they were very healthy, and they were able to go to even though they lived in a leper colony, the children were able to go to a school with the other children. He brought those children one day, and he had this little, like, white handkerchiefs that he sat down on this ledge, and they were all dressed up in the fanciest little clothes you can imagine. They looked like little angels, and he had them sitting there with him, and, you know, and I thought, I mean, to me, he was like a prince or a king, you know? And yet he was this beggar, you know? But that way with the other people in that community, I thought, we are all human beings, you know? I don't have to look at the disease, I can look at the person, you know? But here's the thing, we all have a disease somewhere. It could be in the mind, it could be in the heart, it could be in memory. The worst ones are, you know, they have this whole week on the news about the vets, wounded warriors. And, you know, a lot of them, you don't see anything. They're not missing a limb, but there's something going on. And we don't know. We're encountering people like that every day. So overlooking. And the last thing Murshid lists here is, he says, it's the sign of souls who are turned, it is the sign of souls who are tuned to the high, to a higher key. To a higher key. We could say to a finer note, to the instrument being tuned. And again, I return to that. I use this as an example many times about Murshid. It's in the mysticism of sound that says, it's not the fault of two notes that they don't harmonize. And we're all playing our own note or our own symphony. You know, the dance of our soul is how Murshid would call it, or Nirtan. But our dance might be different than somebody else's dance, and we step on each other's toes. And then Murshid goes on to say in that teaching, but it's the one that strikes that keynote, you know, the note that through which all the instruments in the orchestra tune that can do, you know, be of benefit. So it's like in the dance, when they say, okay, be sensitive to if someone's wanting to move quickly or needs to move slowly. It's like that. You just tune in. We're tuning in. Anything people would like to add to that? Or comments?
I have. You know how you were talking about when people don't let go of things?
Yeah, when people don't let go. Yeah.
Keep going on that hamster wheel or whatever?
Yes.
Actually, I had heard something on the NPR, and they were talking about the brain and how the grooves of the brain, when we do that repetitive thinking or that mulling over, you know, just really drives that in, and so it becomes more difficult to let go of those impressions, and so you have to feed the brain, like, what do they say, feed the wolf, which wolf do you want to feed, you know, you have to, and you have to make, a really strong effort.
That's right.
It appears to me. And I find that in my own life with things that I can go, I'm ruminating again. There I am.
And Murshid actually, in somewhere in this volume, it's on healing in the mind, he does that. He talks about that. That we may, and he gives the analogy of the phonograph that gets the scratch, and then that keeps going there. And he says we do that with our thoughts. So that's part of the reason that I was taught when I first began for doing practices, because it smooths out those lines. It replaces, it's like, which wolf are you gonna feed? Or which swan are you gonna feed? Or what monkey are you gonna feed? Whatever we wanna call it. But it's like those practices, the repetition of practices helps to smooth out those lines in the mind.
It's like the story you shared this morning.
Yeah, look at what happened to that sick old bird.
Thank you, Allah, for everything.
Thank you, Allah, for everything. Yeah. But thank you, because I think that's very much true. And when I find myself doing that, I go, wait. It's like, you know, it's that Buddha story about walking down and falling in the hole and walking down and falling in the hole. Well, why don't you just go down another street? You know what I mean? Okay,
I didn't know the hole to fall into.
Yeah. in Kansas City. Are there new potholes on that street? My goodness. We've had a lot of them. Okay. So merge with anyone else, though, that's lovely, because I think that's exactly right. Yeah. But again, overlooking ourselves and lifting, you know, lifting that phonograph needle, that's a good analogy, I think. But, you know, or, you know, it's like when you go to, anyone been to Pompeii? You know, they have the ruts are in the roads because that's where the width of the chariots, you know? Yeah. So it's like, oh, wait, do I have to keep going in that or can I go a different direction? You know, Vesuvius is there, maybe I need to go that way. Shall I go on? Everyone awake? Deep breath. It would teach me my Buddhist practice to look up, open my eyes, take a deep breath, because you know, you can get a little drowsy when you're meditating or concentrating. So tuning to that higher key, overlooking. So Murshid goes on to say, one may ask, is it practical? I may not be able to say that it is always practical, but I mean it all the same. Is it practical to overlook? Well, I may not be able to say that it always is, but I mean it just the same, he says. For in the end, the one who overlooks will also realize the practicality of it. And then he goes on and says, maybe he or she will realize it in the long run, after one has met with great many disadvantages of it. I always think, if you just take the opportunity to look at your own history, it will give you a lot of insight into where you're moving. And then Murshid says, nevertheless, all is well which ends well. I think he's giving us an indication. You know, what are we getting out of it? What do we gain from keeping these mindsets or hanging on to? Not overlooking, you might say. You know, is there an energy that we're getting from it? You know, does it get our feist on, you know, our fight on? You give us some strength and courage? Sometimes you need it. Not all the time. I was going back to your thought, Yasmin, and I've dropped it. I'll come back to it. We're going to get to a practice, I promise. I'm going to take a look at the time, too. Very often, overlooking costs less than taking notice of something that could well be overlooked. Can you say it's like making a mountain out of a molehill? You've heard that expression, right? Rebecca, it seems like you need to come closer. You can just move your chair and put it anywhere. Just jiggy-jog so you're not blocking someone, but it's okay to come close. Is that close enough? Because you can maybe come in here. You can jiggy jog over here. Why not?
Just didn't want to sit in front of anyone.
I think you can kind of sit in between where some people are.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that good? Maybe a little more this way, and then you won't block Nora Nisa? Yeah. And she's in deep meditation, tuned to Nora Nisa. Pure Vilayat would always tell us when that would happen. Do not worry about it. Your nervous system needs the rest and it's going in anyway. Very often overlooking costs less than taking notice of something that could well be overlooked. In life there are things which matter and there are things which do not matter. As one advances through life, one finds there are many things that do not matter. I have goosebumps on that. I'm sorry. It's really profound. Mm-hmm. As one advances in life, one finds there are many things that do not matter. You know, if we're really lucky as we advance in life, the ego starts to get softened. And how does that happen? Life goes bam, bam, you know, and it really knocks you around. And you can get very soft. It's like the dough, you know, kneading it. Or what else? Give me some examples.
Chickpea.
The chickpea, getting cooked. Yeah. Get back in there. You know, you're not done yet. What else?
The goldsmith.
The goldsmith, that's right. Michelangelo just, I mean, you know, when you look at those Michelangelos and those Berninis, you're like, how in the heck did they turn that solid that looks like soft skin, supple fabrics flowing? It's like, but you know, they talk about that. You know, it takes, think about what the marble endures, that bam, 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 just to get chiseled away, or not a diamond. You know, that pressure of the earth and then finding that, you know, my Rinpoche always said, look at the, it looks like a lump of coal, but what's inside of it? As one advances through life, one finds there are many things that do not matter. If we soften, we'll just see that. What are we hanging on to? And one could just as well overlook them. Now, I want to say, this isn't about being anybody's doormat. You don't serve yourself or others. So I don't want to get any misunderstandings going here. It's to be truly who you are. And if who you are is being injured in some way, then you must step aside. Bless the person on their way and move out of the way. Get out of the situation. It may sound easier said than done, but I've lived it myself, and my family members have lived it, so I know of what I speak, and I know it can be difficult, but there too, thank you, Allah, for everything. You gain great courage and strength by doing that. The one who on a journey, my mother always said she loved the cardinals so much that when I heard them to remember her.
Yeah.
The one who on a journey, which takes Mom, quiet down out there. She always liked to be the center of attention. The one who on a journey, which takes all of his life to accomplish, will take notice of everything that comes his way, will waste his time. So what gets in the way of one's focus and concentration, Mershit's talking about? Here's another aspect of overlooking. Is being distracted part of something that we need to keep refocused so we can really accomplish our life's purpose, our soul's purpose? I have to tell a story, and I'm going to edit it out of this because I don't want to embarrass anyone, but I have some contact with them. Mershit Hidayat Inayat Khan had a son named Fazl. Do you know about him?
Yeah.
Fazl Inayat Khan. He was the head of the Sufi movement for a while, and then there was kind of a division that happened, and it became the Sufi way. And Fazl died quite young, but the family members have all taken on Inayat Khan as part of their last name, so it's always hyphenated. So one of his children, a man, is married to a woman, and they kind of are part of the heads of the Sufi context. So she writes me, I won't mention her name, so maybe that's okay, because there's more than one person that this could be talking about. And she says, I'm guiding a retreat, and I'm supposed to be working on, what did she say, my offering for Sunday, and I'm finding all kinds of things to distract myself. but, you know, self-aware of it. So then she, you know, she stopped, and I could see she was offline. But I thought, she's a very smart woman. She realizes what she's doing. Yeah, pay attention to those things. I would tell my students, they'd say, oh, I'm getting nowhere with this concept or this design, and they'd be doodling in the margin. And I'd say, oh, wait a minute, let's look at this little doodle, and let's, I think that is the design, you know what I mean? And they won awards off some of those doodles. Mm-hmm. I mean, big awards, like international things. So sometimes it's outside of the content. Where we're looking isn't where it is. It's in this soft awareness too. So sometimes we have to overlook the concrete and become more, again, beyond. Murshid says, while climbing the mountain of life, he's not saying floating in the clouds. He's saying climbing the mountain of life. You know what it's like to be at a high altitude, don't you? Mm-hmm. We were just in Peru. It's like they offered oxygen every night at the hotel, and it's like, bring it on, baby. I'll take that oxygen. I mean, it's hard. I mean, they brought it as a service to the room. You could order it up. And some of them had oxygen bars in the but it, yeah, it's pretty serious stuff. So anyway, Murshid says, climbing the mountain of life, the purpose of which is to reach the top. If a person troubles about every little thing that comes along, perhaps they will never be able to reach the top.
Sounds familiar.
Right? Right? Who doesn't know this? They'll always be troubling about little things at the bottom. I had a student in college. He was often late, but he was also brilliant. And so one day I went up to him, and I'm pretty, at private schools I could do this, at the college I couldn't because it was public, but at private schools when I was teaching at the private art institute, I'd lock my students out, they couldn't come in, and three absences was a failure. So I was pretty serious about attendance and being on time. Just FYI, I'd be at the front of the lunch line. Okay. But I took him aside and I said, I cannot understand what is going on with you. You're brilliant. You're here. You're present when you're here. And he told me, this is one of those things, and this is a condition that needs therapeutic help, or I don't know, some other kind of help. And we have therapists here that can tell us. But he was an obsessive compulsive. And he couldn't leave the home until his bedspread was perfect, all around the bottom and even. It just bothered him that much. And so I can't remember what we did, but I think we did get him talking to someone, and I said, you know, I'm a little bit like that, like things have to be on a grid, and I said, but you won't believe how much, if you could just try to do it once, it'll irritate you, but, you know, it's something I personally work on, too, because I'm a little bit that way. I think a lot of designers are, you know, you just are, so, you know, the type has to be perfect, the lighting has to be perfect, the heading has to be perfect, the color, you know, and you just get obsessive about it. That's why most designers wear black. And it's true. I've gone to conferences, I'm the only person with color. Everybody knows me, you know? It's like, you're all in black, you're designers. It's so unbelievable. It really, isn't it true?
Or black brown glasses.
No, you know, you've been with me at professional conferences. Okay, so anyway. So we don't want all these things at this level to distract us from the goal. Maybe we need to keep our eyes on this site. Murshid Hidayat would often say that. And Anayat Khan says that. By keeping your eye on, you know, and you can make it different words. We'll call it the goal here. You actually draw the goal closer to yourself. And he also gives that teaching Murshid does, I love, about the cobra, right? He talks about the cobra uses its breath to draw its prey to itself, and then it kind of mesmerizes its prey by its little dance. It's all there in nature. Can you hear? Someone's vacated that chair.
The chair up here.
You don't want to miss one pearl of these wisdoms. So don't trouble about the little things. Little details may not be perfect, but thank you, Allah, for everything. Thank you, God, for everything. Oh, just a little bit more. Now I've gotten like Joe. His computer does this and mine doesn't. He says, oh, you Apple people, you're so, yeah. Because I think PCs are arcade. They should be doorstops, but that's just me. I will take donations given from Apple, too. No soul really is realizing that life on this earth, listen to this, no soul realizing that life on this earth is only 4 days long will trouble about little things. There's a meteor coming towards earth. You have 4 days. What's important to you? Being with the people you love. Mending the fences that have been, you know, mom always had three sayings. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't cut off your nose to spite yourself. And don't burn the bridges behind you. Great advice, right? You've heard your mom say that too, or your dad's, or someone wise in your life. No soul realizing that life on this earth is only 4 days long will trouble about little things. Any of you that have either had some sort of a tragic accident or a serious illness, or with yourself or others, you know, you start to live your life a little bit differently. Your perspective changes, am I right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He will trouble about things that really matter in her life or his life. With little things, a person loses the opportunity of accomplishing great things in life. The one who troubles about small things is small. The soul who thinks about great things is great. What's that quote? Someone help me. Where your something goes, there lies your treasure. What is it? Where your heart. So it's like, where is that? And every day it's kind of moving, isn't it? Because everything's impermanent. But that's also helpful. I think I don't have to live here forever. I just live here for a little while and then things will change.
That's how it is right now.
That's how it is right now. Thank you, Allah, for everything. You fall on the hot sand and burn your feet like the little bird. Thank you, Allah, for everything. You don't have anything to eat? That's okay. I could lose a few pounds. You know, whatever. It really is all God. We forget it. God, how we forget it. The one who troubles about small things is small. The soul who thinks of great things is great. Again, that quote by Mother Teresa. Are you hiding in there, Marcia? Yeah. Look at him. He's just being so modest. But she would always say, we may not do great things, but we do small things with great love. Mm-hmm. So what's the intention? What's the motivation? Watch that. I think that's a little bit what Murshida Darvesha was also talking about this morning, was watching that intention enthusiastically, one's motivation. I'm going to do a time check here because I do want to do a practice, a little more time. Murshid says that overlooking is the first step in forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Overlooking is the first step in forgiveness. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I have something sticking inside that I just find I have a hard time forgiving, I just really know that it truly is hurting me more than it is anyone else. It's like a sore that just festers inside of me. It's not healthy. But it does take time sometimes to go get over those things. But you know, it's interesting. I have a neighbor, and I see her working very hard. She raised four children alone. her husband came back from Vietnam War troubled, and they couldn't stay together because of it. Now they, so she would talk to me about it sometimes, and I, again, I'd see the children coming and going, and it's like, gosh, you know, I felt she was really such a hardworking person and a real wholesome, pure-hearted person, I would say, very kind. But in a way, I thought, well, the children, if I had my druthers, would help her more than they do. Anyway, that's what she chose and the way she lived her life. And they've all grown up to be lovely individuals, responsible individuals. But the other day, we happened to be talking. She's getting her house painted, and the people are doing an amazing job on it. We have stucco homes, so when you have to do that repair, it takes a certain kind of artisan to do it. And I said to her, she looked well, and so we were talking a little bit. It's been a long, hard winter in Kansas City. We have new neighbors moved on the block. I didn't even know it because I'm usually outside all the time. It's like, did you get a new dog? No, we're the new people with the new dog. You know? But I was talking to this woman, and I said, well, I see a gentleman that comes around here. I have a feeling, is that the children's father and your ex-husband? And she said, you know, I talked to you. She said, all these years I couldn't forgive him for the way our lives turned out because of what had happened and the way he treated us and was not much help in the raising of the children. But she said, then you said, I don't even remember saying this, but it's something I do. I said, you know what? It's the hardest thing you're going to have to do, but send him love from your heart to his heart and pray for him. Pray for him, because really you don't want anyone to be unhappy or to endure hardship or be troubled in their minds. And she said, do you know, it was like magic. I could forgive him, and we've become friends, and he's very helpful here. He's not moving in. We're not doing that. But, you know, we enjoy each other's company, and he helps me around the house. And, you know, it's really like a beautiful, you know, it's a beautiful thing to do. And it helps, you know, it's a little bit like Tonglen because it generates that feeling instead of anger or, you know, hatred or distrust or you just generating love. I mean, we're singing it upstairs day and night, but do we do it? I've had to do it. When I was a little girl, I never thought of myself as being bullied till someone somewhat recently was recounting what they classified as being bullied, and I thought, man, that is nothing compared to what I went through. You know, I didn't say that to the person, but you know, you don't look like this and live in the really pristine white bread neighborhood that I grew up in and not get taunted. Of course, all the things that they talked about, lips, eyes, you know, whatever else, big butt, skinny legs, whatever you want to call it, I thought, yeah, me and the Kardashians now. You know, it's like, you wish you had all this going on now. But it didn't sit right with them. I wasn't the same color. I didn't look like them. And so there were all kinds of names. And you know, I don't know. You call me a sociopath. I really didn't care. At a young age, I had that, like, I don't care what you're calling me. It doesn't have anything to do with who I am. I'd just go sit on the bus, and they'd go on, and I just... I don't know how I have that.
Sounds like you got overlooking early.
Overlooking early, because I would have been really angry and so sad. And I just thought, I don't know. I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say, bounces off of me and sticks to you. But you know, it was just like you have to be a little bit, I call it being Teflon, like having Teflon or duck. And just shake that off. But it is overlooking. And it's not letting those things that are so harmful going in. Go in. Don't let them go in. Mm-hmm. Now I'll tell you some Italian secrets. You want to know them?
Sure.
So it's kind of like the old saying, you have to pick your battles. You have to acknowledge that you see something, you're aware of it, whatever's coming up in you, say, well, that's just me, that's my ego, and it's like, I'm just going to let that go past. Because there's a time when we do need to.
Oh, yeah, and I am so scrappy. I have to watch myself, because I can do that quickly. You know, so it's like, is this worth it? No, I'd rather go swimming, you know? Really.
There it is.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, making your choices, choosing happiness. But, you know, it's also this, you've seen this gesture. I think you've seen it like a hand that people, right? So, I mean, that's one of the things also is just, can come and it goes right back out. So that's what the meaning of that symbol. You've seen it. They wear, Italians wear it in gold a lot. It's like that comes and it just goes right back out. You don't let it come in, you know? Mom used to, these are old wives things, but people do use them when I've told them and they seem helpful. Like she would take the scissors and open them up in the windows. Like in a window seal, it's the same thing. Mm. Mm. Or knives. And no one else's mom did this?
No.
Oh, these are the Italian secret. But, you know, it.
It's like Turkish evil eyes or something. Yeah.
It's exactly, and in Greek they have the eye, and then they hand a patina the eye. It's the same thing. You see it in other cultures for sure. In Peru, they're the bulls. But look, the bulls. Mm-hmm. The horns.
Yeah.
So we got a big, colorful bull. It's a beautiful little ceramic bull. And we have these, some of you have seen them, the big singing bulls that are sitting on a table. And I didn't really know where to put the bull. So I put it in the bowl. And Joe said, my husband said, now we have a singing bull. He's so very clever. He's a man of few words, but when he says something, it's really very clever. Now we have a singing bull. So overlooking is the first lesson of forgiveness. This tendency springs from love and sympathy. For of whom one hates, one notices every little fault. Mm-hmm. Did you, can you believe it? They did it again. Oh, they just, right?
Yeah.
But the one whom one loves, one naturally overlooks the faults. Oh my God, especially when you first fall in love, they can't do any wrong. Right?
Yeah.
It's just later it becomes slightly irritating. Yeah. But then we say, yeah, but they're so cute and sweet. Life has endless things which suggest beauty. Again, that message of Murshida Vera. Concentrate on something beautiful. Remember, Yasmin, of course you were tending to a baby at the time Emily was with us at Heart Song. Uh-huh. Murshida Vera was there. We were doing the work on the inner child. I don't know, Rahima, if you were there. I don't know if anyone else was there that's in the room, but that was one of the things she had us do, was get a flower and concentrate. Remember she had to do us concentration practice? I think we could pick something in nature, maybe a flower or a stone or something. But that was, you know, one of the practices of Murshida. And again, that what we concentrate on, we draw near to us. So here's a little story. But really be careful, you have to watch it. So one day I was driving, you know, some of you know that we have the little fun car in the summer. Joe had bought me an older Mustang convertible. My mother and sister, my mother would drive up like, she would wear her little scarf, which since she's not a babushka woman at all, believe me. But she looked like Grace Kelly in the front seat. She put her little. And so my sister would always sit in the back seat. And one day we were driving, we had gone quite a distance up to the Excelsior to go to the swimming pool. And my sister said, and I had just come back from Europe, from the summer school there in the Netherlands. And she said, did you notice your tag expired? And I'm like, oh my God, no. And it was a new car, so it was like a year license or something. We hadn't noticed it, and I had been driving it, and I was totally safe. We weren't a mile away from where that happened. You should put her energy right there. Boom, you know? Isn't that interesting?
It's true.
If I see something in a store, and I don't shop very much, I don't like shopping, but if I find something in a store and I think, I want to think about it, I hide it in another part of the store because I know sure as shit. Someone's going to come in and start looking at it and buy it. It's happened. You heard it. You heard it, right? So it's like you put your energy there, right? And it can happen.
Which is also one of the things that they say, if you have a really good idea of something you want to do, you just
keep your mouth shut.
And I always say, if you want to keep a secret, don't talk about it.
Well, and Mersha Nikon said that. Don't tell people your aspirations because they may diminish them.
And don't think about it around them.
I was talking with someone recently, an old friend that we've rekindled a friendship from England, and the person was recounting how much she preferred to live in the U.S. because she said, there, if you have an idea, people will give you so many reasons why you can't do something.
It's true.
You know what I mean? They always say if you're trying to change a habit, don't mention it to people because they'll do everything to sabotage. You know, a lot of people will. But you have to have a lot of willpower.
It's like, here's a cookie. Here's a cookie.
Yeah, just a little nibble. Yeah. Temptations are all around us.
You have to overlook it.
We have to overlook it. So this tendency of overlooking, which is the first lesson of forgiveness, comes from love and sympathy. For of the one we dislike, we see every little fault. And, you know, like, do you have to eat that loud? Right? It can be something like that. You keep smacking your lips like that or what? You know what I mean? It could be anything. We just let it, you know, but if we love someone, we just think everything's so beautiful about them. Again, there's a little bit of a time limit on this, and then you have to really, kind of start really working it. Overlooking. Overlooking, right?
Our gentle nudges.
Yes, that's right. So the one who has risen, the wider the outlook on the horizon, and the tendency to sympathize, which brings a desire to overlook. Mersha uses that word sympathize very specifically. He doesn't like the word, he's mentioned that, he doesn't like the word pity. The one who has the tendency to sympathize brings the desire to overlook. Now he says, and is that it is the analytical tendency. Anybody have that? And it is the analytical tendency which weighs and measures and takes good notice of everything. So we have to, you know, there's all a balance, right? Merchant uses the quote of Jesus, judge ye not, lest ye be judged. Because I don't know about you, but I can't tell you how many times, maybe I haven't said anything, but I've thought, you know, something about someone's actions, and sure as heck, the next thing I see myself doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my God, thank you God for everything. They highlighted that for me so I could notice it within myself. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Everybody's our teacher. Just a little bit, and then we're going to do practice, and then it's over. The more one thinks of this lesson, this judge ye not, lest ye be judged, the deeper it goes into one's heart. And what one learns from it is to try and overlook all that does not fit into one's own idea as to how things ought to be in life, until one comes to a stage of realization where the whole of life becomes a sublime vision of the immanence of God. The more one thinks of this lesson, the deeper it goes into one's heart. And what one learns from it is to try and overlook all that does not fit in with one's own ideas of how things ought to be in life, until one comes to a stage of realization where the whole of life becomes one sublime vision of the eminence of God. I want that.
Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, they'll tempt me, won't they? There, another quick story. So I had received this. I love WhatsApp. Do you all use WhatsApp?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to anybody in the world, right? So, anyways, I get this phone call from someone, a WhatsApp call from someone in India, and they had a dispute with someone that they had been very close to. It was kind of heartbreaking. I had heard the accounting from both parties. The exact same accounting of what happened, but different intonations when they're telling their story. Almost the exact same words, but then so-and-so did da-da-da-da-da, and then I only did da-da-da-da-da. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. I'm thinking, I've never heard you talk quite like da-da-da-da in your whole life. So anyway, I said to this one person who just seemed maybe not as emotionally sophisticated, hadn't had to deal with this so much, and one day we were talking and just going on, recounting, and I thought, this is going to become one of those lines in the mind. And I said, you know, could we just take a moment and be quiet and maybe close our eyes and see this other individual as very happy and at peace? Because if there's a dispute, perhaps it's an unrest either in one's own mind or in the other's mind. Either way, what we really want is for people to be happy and wholesome and balanced. And, you know, we don't know what the causes and conditions are that have arisen. You know the story and what's, you know, you're speculating about it. But let's just do that. And this had been almost 2 months of not speaking to each other, although encountering each other, but one turning away from the other. It was very hurtful. And so we did that. And I said, I'll continue to do this if you wish me to on this situation. And would you be willing to continue to do this? And they said, yes, it feels better to do that. And within 24, 48 hours, the other person reached out and they were able to mend their friendship. Now, you can't really explain that, but it changed something in, perhaps in the atmosphere or that current between them, you know? That's just a recent example. Sorry?
Thank you all.
All for everything. That's right. All right. Let's do a practice. And then I would personally like to have a photo because all of our friends from the far like to have a photo of us. And if anyone does not want to be in the photo, that's great. You take the photo for us, okay? So the one practice I want to work with throughout these next few days, but showing the different facets of it, is called Aziz, the sacred name Aziz. And so there is an aspect of Aziz that is God's power of refined strength that is graceful. God's power of refined strength that is graceful. And it's a sense of power that allows your ego to become detached. Who couldn't use some of that? It's a sense of power that allows one's ego to become detached from clinging to a presumed sort of outcome. And it's a way where we can then begin to forgive. So this is one aspect of Aziz. It's kind of power, but it's rarefied. It's gracious, but it's in it, and it's detached. Not disconnected, but unattached from those outcomes like Marcia was talking about. So at any moment, my probably Morocco or, you know, Mimbamba or whatever it is, alarm will go off, so we'll just keep through this. Let's just do it 11, 11 and 11, okay? 11 beginning with Aziz, and maybe we'll intone it. And we don't linger on the Ya because that's just kind of the door opener, but we could linger a little bit on the Aziz. So 11 times Ya Aziz like that. Then we'll just breathe in Aziz and out Aziz on a whisper like this. And then we just hear it inside. You know, these wazifas, these sacred words, the zikr. It actually, one of the instructions Pir Murshid Hidayat gave me was, he gave it to me, the zikr of Inayat Khan, as a practice to just do internally, because it will, he said, it will circulate through the, your whole circulatory system and change you.
Yeah.
No, and they're finding that, you know.
Yeah.
Dr. Lupton and Lipton, he's looking at, right? He's looking at the DNA can get re-script, and part of that is thinking, how we think. Yeah. We change our form. Mm-hmm.
Remind me of the meaning of Aziz.
Aziz. We have some time still. Aziz is like the power, the all-powerful. But it's like this refined power, it's rarefied, detached. Does anyone else have another explanation of Aziz?
In the physicians of the heart, they speak of the baby eaglet.
Oh.
So it's that flight, that potential strength that hasn't yet come to fruition, but that is the destiny of the eagle.
That's right. Oh, precious, yeah. So see also what arises for you. We have all these wonderful definitions, but I also find that by doing the practice, you'll discover something. Okay? So those in the circle, our kind of inner circle, Murid circle, will be taking this up as a practice. If you wish to use it, please confer with, please refer to your physician, your of the heart, your guide, your own guide. Ya Aziz. Ya Aziz. Wazifas go, they have a direction to them. Notice the direction this is moving in your body with the sound. Just on the in-breath and out-breath, silently but feeling this rarefied emergence of power, but also with detachment. Yeah, Aziz.